So here we are, Nehemiah. This is lesson 49 on the Old Testament. What's in there? What's in it for us? Chapter 8, I would just love to go over chapter 8 again, but I won't, because it's just how they did their worship in the temple deal. And it's a process and it's a procedure that we pretty much identically follow. Not so much us anymore, but there's still a lot there. And it's Old Testament, and is it necessary to do it that way? Not at all. I mean, just not at all. Acts chapter 17 takes care of that. But is it wrong to do that? That's not even worth arguing about, because if it's just not the way God would have it done, then why do we do that? Why do we get out the Old Testament style and try to follow that? But I do want you to see, though, what's that? No, it helps to push the button, too. Now it should work, hopefully, anyway. But what I do like to read in there, where in verse 8, where it says the preacher guy gives the sense and causes them to understand their reading. I like that. I like verse 9, where it says at the end, all the people wept when they heard the words of the law. They were touched, as people say today. None of this stuff has anything to do with what Ezra did to them. It was all responded because of the book of the law. Anyway, it says that they were attentive. Where does it say they were attentive? Not that it really matters this morning. Other things to talk about. But it says they were attentive. 3. Yet all the ears of the people were attentive unto the book of the law. I mean, they really wanted to know what that book said. They really wanted to know. And look at us today. You don't have to have me do this. You've got a Bible. You've got all that you need right there in front of you. And I'm just to help you see some stuff or whatever, like it says up there. And I just really enjoy reading chapter 8 greatly. The book, and we know today the book of the law, the Bible, rightly divided. The law is the Old Testament, Gospels, and then you've got the... congratulations, new dad. You brought us all dark chocolate for the celebration thing? Or bring it next week, okay. Now remember, you said you'd bring it next week. So is Amy out there? She watching? Amy, he said... Oh, she brought her with you, the baby and everything? Why didn't you come early? What's the deal with that?
Close your eyes, amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 3 blocks from the church. Okay, look at verse 1. I like verse 1. We'll review this thing. Look at verse 1. And all the people gathered themselves together as one man. They're just comments in chapter 8. That are so good for us to just kind of review ourselves with. Now, down on verse 13, we see that the second day, all that took place in one day. So the second day things take place. And on the second day, it's when all the honchos, the big guys, get together. The chief of the fathers, the priests, the fathers of all the people, the priests, the Levites, scribe, etc. So they all get together. Now, these are the big guys, the big guns. And in verse 14, it says, and they found written in the law. Remember, this is all new to them. And they found written in the law that the children of Israel should dwell in booths. So see, the fair booth is okay. This is a special festivity, and they need to have booths. And he tells them what they have to do in verse 15, what they have to do to how to make these booths. And so they did so. Verse 16, it says, and the people did went forth and brought them and made themselves booths. I mean, the guy preached what he preached about out of the book of the law, and the people wept, and they were attentive, and how it was done. The people stood when it was read, and the people did what they were supposed to do. Now, and look at verse 17. It said they did it with great gladness. They were happy to, and you can't imagine this must have changed their lives. They have the book of the law, all of a sudden come out and find out what they're doing is wrong. Remember the thing about the strange wives we'll see in a couple minutes? And I mean, they did it with gladness. They knew it was from God. And so they just jumped up and just did what they had to do. So chapter 8 is a marvelous chapter. Look at verse 18. Nehemiah, also day by day, from the first day until the last, he read in the book of the law. And that's a marvelous chapter. Remember, we don't have to follow the Old Testament as an example, but as an end sample. This is their way, and they got into it, and they enjoyed it, and they changed their lives. We don't need to follow this pattern of the temple, but we can get together. You can get together in your home with other people and read the Bible you don't really have to stand up or anything like that, and then they may weep, they may get excited, they may have their lives changed, and their lives, they'll do it with very great gladness. I mean, all that's in there. But as a pattern for us building a church and a temple and the pulpit and all this stuff, I mean, okay, so you do something within your home. You need to build a little pulpit so you need to stand out a couple books or something and be higher than the rest of your family or the people that are there. I mean, you see where people go with this stuff, you know? No, just get into the book that's to us today, which is Rightly Divided, King James Bible. Get into that thing. Be attentive to it and make those changes gladly because it's from God. It's not from me. It's not from Dad. It's from God. So, there you go. There's my summary of chapter 8. Chapter 9. I'll take a breath, and we'll do chapter 9. Now, chapter 9, verses 1 through 5 here. Now in the 24th day of this month, the children of Israel were assembled with fasting. You know, years ago, I used to think that meant children of Israel were all the kids. Well, this isn't to us, this is to the kids. So I got out of that for a couple of years, but then I realized that's really dumb. So anyway. They assembled with fasting and with sackcloths and earth upon them. Okay, now, we've done the earth upon us. I know those folks will come in here with earth upon them because they're out there working on the fields, whatever, and you know, you come in here with earth and smell, so that's okay. But I wouldn't make it a point, you know, go out there, I'm having a blousy day, and throw a bunch of dirt on you. And fast for a couple of days before church and go out there and buy a bunch of rags and wear them sackcloths, whatever. So, and the seed of Israel separated themselves from all strangers, there we go, and stood and confessed their sins and the iniquities of their fathers. So, you know, get down there and pray by yourself, confess up your sins, and then also deal with your dad and your mom. Well, Lord, you know, when Dad was da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. No, see, this is something to learn from. This is not something to exemplify and follow like that. So we see the Old Testament stuff. And they stood in their place, verse 3, and read in the book of the law of the Lord, their God, 1/4 part of the day. And another 1/4 part they confessed and worshiped the Lord their God. Marvelous stuff. I mean, they really got into this thing. But we realize that isn't what Paul preaches. We have to know that. And here's what I want everybody to see. This is what's going on in churches all across the nation today. They're doing some form of this Old Testament temple design here. If we can recognize that, it's everywhere. Or the modern guys who don't want to do that, the Rick Warrens, that crowd, do something totally different, which is not even in the Bible. Or if it is, it's based on false doctrine or whatever. So there are people that wise up to this and say, well, this is just Old Testament stiffy, stuffy, no fun kind of a thing, which it is, and then they just throw it all out, and then they do something totally designed on their own selves, casual, this and that, whatever, in the modern way. So there's two ways of looking at this thing, wrong and right. So everybody's really getting messed up because they want to get away from that, or they want to try to do that, one way or the other. Acts chapter 17 kind of negates this whole thing about worship in this style. 1 John 1:9 tells about the confessing thing, and it's just rightly divided stuff. Okay, now, in chapter 9, there's more things. I look at verse 5. Look at verse 4. It says at the end, these guys stood upon the stairs and da-da-da-da-da-da, cried with a loud voice unto the Lord their God. They cried with a loud voice. Verse 5, then they say, stand up and bless the Lord your God forever and ever. So they have to stand, and blessed be thy glorious name, which is exalted above all blessing and praise. And it doesn't say, and they sat down, and he goes on and he preaches, and he talks about God's goodness. If there's a history that you can sit down and read through, verse 6, all the way to the end of that chapter, you can review what do you know about the Old Testament. Because that's a marvelous review right there. But what they're talking about here is how, even though God did the numbers on them, the chastising and the kiboshing and all that, he was still there for them to keep going. And this is basically about the goodness of God while they're trekking across the desert. So that is a marvelous summary to read to your kids or family, whatever, and see how much of that you don't know or do know. Well, there's something I don't remember that. Where's that at? Dig it up and look for it. It's a great history. So look at verse 37, I guess. But look at verse 33. Verse 31, it says, "Nevertheless, for thy great mercy's sake, thou didst not utterly consume." See, God had every right in the earthly world to just destroy the whole crowd, even those 20 or younger, or younger than 20. But he didn't. "For thou art a gracious and merciful God. Now therefore, our God, the great, the mighty, and the terrible God, who keepeth covenant and mercy," he kept his, he didn't destroy him. Verse 33, Nehemiah, "Howbeit thou art just in all that is brought upon us, for thou hast done right, but we have done wickedly." Wouldn't you like your kids to say that to you? When you're done disciplining them and they say, "You know, Dad or Mom, you're totally right and I'm just wrong." I tell you, I'm working on a sermon about why our kids are the way they are, and let me tell you this, I'll get back in the trail, it's because we have taught them by example. I'm telling you, I am serious about this, and I can't tell you why, I never will tell you why, but, our kids, your kids, are probably the way they are, is because you showed them how to do it. I'm serious. I am so serious. What does Jim White say? Serious as AIDS. I mean, it's a serious thing. And I have just come to an observation that, boy, I tell you, back off on your kids because they're just doing what you taught them by actions. I mean, I wish I could tell you what I know. it just has shown me that, no. And it's not anything, it's not anything anybody's told me. So relax. I just know that our kids today are because we show them. And you can teach them all you want, you can spank them all you want, but you're showing them the wrong way. Back off on your kids. Oh, it stirred me. So let's get back to Nehemiah. Because they saw how God had mercy on them. In verse 38, he says, "And because of all this, we make the sure covenant and write it, and our princes, Levites, and priests seal unto it." And they're willing to make a covenant and say, "Listen, we are going to follow you, God, the way you say it. We are, and we sign this covenant." Now, you know that the back of, is this the hymn book that has, well, there you go. Not, it's not, but in the back of a lot of church hymn books, you've got a covenant. Baptist Church hymn books, and a bunch of other churches too, I guess. I thought we had one here, where if you join the church, you got to read that covenant and you got to sign it. And that promises that you will do everything perfect. That's what they make you do. And again, Old Testament thing. Why do we need a covenant when we have a Bible? I mean, that's just where it's at. Now, if you want to go be a member of this church, here's what you have to do. And you sign that you're going to do it. If you don't do it, I can destroy you in front of the whole church. That's what those things are for. They scare you to do right. And that's a covenant. And there's covenant theology. I mean, you just type in the word covenant, and you've got more opinions and more teachings than you can imagine. It's amazing. Because of this stuff right here. And so you read about it. Look at verse 28 of chapter 10. You know that we don't see that, the only reason we see what we see is because they're rightly divided in the King James Bible. Do you know that? I mean, it's not because we have studied all the arguments and all the teachings and all the different variations of this and that. Rightly dividing the King James Bible exposes it all, and it's not even worth arguing about except King James and rightly dividing. I'm working on a serious subject right now that a lot of people are into, and they mean well, and it's marvelous, but it's wrong. It's a doctrine of the devil, and it's picking up in participation in our churches as well. And I could go. I got a stack of stuff about it. I could read through all that stuff and argue and bicker about all the different little points. But all I got to say is, it's not King James. But you got the crowd that is King James. Okay, it's not rightly divided. Stops the whole thing. It's amazing. Just amazing. So anyway, let's see what they've done with the covenant that they have determined here in the Old Testament days. Verse 28, and the rest of the people, the priests, the Levites, the porters, the singers, even the musicians got involved. It's hard to get musicians involved, isn't it, Jimmy? We're just out there practicing and playing our instruments. And the Nethinims and all they that had separated themselves from the people of the lands, there you go, that's serious people, unto the law of God, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, everyone having knowledge and having understanding. These are serious people. Now this is totally separation here. I mean, they left them. Do you realize what would happen to you if you Old Testament separated? You'd have to quit working. You couldn't work out there. You couldn't do that. You could because you're in your home. That's, amen. But you probably couldn't talk to half of them. You know, and you got to stay clean. If I go over to your place, I'm getting dirty. I can't go over there. Now, the kings don't think of that. They think, if I go over to your place, I will get dirty. They'll go over there, because they like getting dirt. But you girls probably don't like to get dirty. Danica, do you like getting dirty? Say no, say no, say no, say no, say no. See? Parent example. You like to get dirty, ma'am? Yeah, see, there you are. I mean, what are you going to do? So there's the details there in chapter 10, the details of the covenant. I mean, they promised not to do this. They promised not to give our daughters unto the people of the land, nor take their daughters for our sons. And it just goes down the list. Now, those are good things. I mean, you don't want your daughter or your husband, well, you really don't want your husband, but your son or your daughter to marry some worldly, unsaved person. Really. And it's getting harder and harder, because as you learn this stuff, you don't want them to be a non-King James, want them to rightly divide. I mean, you're down to the point where why don't you just draw on a piece of paper who you love and bury his, because you're not going to find this guy. I'm sorry. Yes, you are. They're out there. You just got to, I don't know. We're working on it. You're working on it. I mean, no, it'll got to take care of that stuff, but anyway. But that is some serious separation. And we still have to do some of that, because you wouldn't want your kids to hang around with somebody who's lost and are going to, or religious, and they're going to influence your child towards that other stuff. You don't want your kids to be swept into the NIV or the modern Rick Warren stuff. I mean, you're scared to death of that. So there is some ensample here to learn. But look at chapter 11. Chapter 11 goes through the list of names of people and talks about some of the duties and how they're assigned to different people. So within this church family right here, so people wouldn't have to say, hey, this whole church has to do everything you say and it has to be your way, which I know some people have complained to some of the former preachers about. It's all because of the way I want to do it. Well, A, I'm going to be accountable for this whole place, but we got other people that do things, don't we? A few things? You know, I'll tell you what, if I'd have listened to everybody's general comments about 8 years ago, we wouldn't be where we are today. Not because of me, but because of rightly divided. We have got to submit ourselves to this book, and so do I. So anyway, get back on track if I can. So you see, for example, in chapter 11, overseers, ruler of the house of God, those that do the work of the house, overseers of the outward business of the house of God. Hey, LD, I don't mess with the money thing. I just spend it. And he keeps track of where it's going. You know? And when he dies, I don't know what we're going to do, because I don't want any of you being traitor. I really don't. No offense, but you don't need to know what everybody gives and doesn't give. That's a tough position to be as a treasurer. So John McCord out there, who's a treasurer for the church out there in Indiana, you need to move into here, and you will be our treasurer as soon as LD dies. You got about 3 days. So get out of here so we can finish up there, because I don't want anybody else doing that from around here. John wouldn't know it. Boy, I ought to hear the things LD tells me about you folks and your giving. Boy, I'll tell you, there'll be some parties, don't we, LD? I can tell when you're mad, your giving goes, I don't know a thing about it. I really don't. I know when I was treasurer in South Dakota, when somebody was mad, their giving quit. When somebody was thrilled, their giving went high. It was kind of funny to watch, but Patrick didn't laugh. I was the one laughing, but oh well. There are gatekeepers in this assignment of duties. The singers, the sons of Asaph, were over the business of the house of God. Man, put a position in any position is dangerous. I'm amazed at that. And don't go there with that. I know what you're thinking with that one. And yet it said in verse 23, look at 11:23, the king said, hey, you better pay those musicians too. Daily. Like that, Jimmy? I like that one, yeah. If we can just get them to do the same thing for artists, then you can Yes, you don't hear starving musicians, you just hear a starving artist. Anyway. So, chapter 12, we're flying today, we're flying. Chapter 12, the first 26 verses are more names of priests, more people's names. But then you get to 27, and here we go again. Another Old Testament thing, dedication of the wall. Dedicated. You're gonna promise this thing is going to be for God. And verse 27, what have we got? Verse 27. And the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought the Levites out of their places to bring them to Jerusalem to keep the dedication with gladness, both with thanksgiving and with singing, with cymbals, psalteries, and with harps and guitars and harmonicas and, you know, there you are, see? So what we see as we go through this chapter then, we see, look at verse 43. We see great festivities. Also that day they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced, for God had made them rejoice with great joy. The wives also and the children rejoiced, so that the joy of Jerusalem was heard even afar off. So we have churches and programs and modern Bible crowds getting into the rejoicing aspect of it. It's a performance, it's entertainment. And they say, there it is right there. It's so loud and everybody's having such a great time that the whole world hears this stuff. Yes, but these guys are rejoicing for a reason. There's a reason. They're giving themselves to God. They've been through the disaster they've been through, and they've got their temple rebuilt. They've got their wall rebuilt. They're dedicating these things, and they're going to serve God again, and they're just having a great time. But that isn't what goes on today. These churches are lying. They're not even preaching to them about anything anyway, let alone anything within their lives. And they're skipping all that, going right to the rejoicing, going right to the festivities. Look at verse 27. Again, with singers, with singing, with cymbals, psalteries, and harps. So there's music at it. Look at verse 36. And his brethren, Shemaiah and Azrael, etc., etc., with the musical instruments of David, the man of God. So we've got these musicians. I mean, music is in this thing. Look at verse 45. And both the singers and the porters kept the word of the ward of their God, and the ward of the purification according to the commandments. So the singers are involved. There's music again. 46, for in the days of David and Asaph of old, there were chief of the singers and songs of praise and thanksgiving. I mean, there's music in this thing. And there's music in this thing. There's music in this thing. And the celebrations, rejoicing with great joy. Yet it's based on a truth. And what's going on today are based on lies. And people are coming to the churches because of the rejoicing, because of the festivities, not as a result of something. So it's just totally backwards today. And our guys are starting to do this. Now look at verse, I guess I didn't write the verse down. That was from your here, so I'll make a note of that thing. Put in the verse. I think it's in verse 40. Yeah, we're still on 12. No, it was verse 31 first. Verse 31, then I brought up the princes of Judah upon the wall and appointed two great companies of them that gave thanks, whereof one went on the right hand upon the wall toward the dung gate, and then down in 40, we've got the group that's on the other side. So if you read this stuff slowly, you can start to picture all these things. There's a crowd of people over here on this side of the gate. There's a crowd of people over here, and there's rejoicing going on, and there's festivities going on, and the music people are playing, and they're giving thanks. I mean, these are serious people. But this is a result of their lives being changed and God taking care of them. So, there you go with that. Chapter 13. I tell you, this. We'll probably just have to read the chapter, but we won't. I'll just give you the summary of it. Nehemiah cleans house. I mean, he cleans house. Something we ought to do. Clean house. Well, that's what you guys are doing right now. You're cleaning house. With their junk and their books and Bible stuff and their pictures, I suppose, or whatever, I don't know. Souvenirs of all the travels of the world that you've had. And you look at that and go, that cost me about $12,000. And so, no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, where's the temple of God today? The temple. We're the temple of God. This is what needs house cleaning. You know, now he cleaned house when we got spiritually circumcised, of course, and all that sort of a thing. But there's still things in our lives that need to be cleaned out. And Nehemiah can be our end sample. Look at verse 1. And on that day, they read in the book of Moses, in the audience of the people, and therein was found written that the Ammonite and the Moabite should not come into the congregation of God forever. You mean there's somebody that shouldn't be coming here? Well, because they met not the children of Israel with bread and with water, but hired Balaam against them that he should curse them, albeit our God turned the curse into a blessing. Okay. Now it came to pass when they had heard the law that they separated from Israel all the mixed multitude. And before this, Eliashib, the priest, having the oversight of the chamber of the house of our God, he was a big guy. Not size-wise, he was a biggie. Was allied into Tobiah. Who's Tobiah? Go back. Yeah. So we got a problem here. You know. And he had prepared for him a great chamber where aforetime they laid the meat offerings, the frankincense, the vessels, and the tithes of the corn, the new wine, and the oil, which is commanded to be given to the Levites and the singers. I mean, we just look at verse 7, and I came to Jerusalem and understood of the evil that Elisha did for Tobiah in preparing him a chamber in the courts of the house of God. It grieved me sore. Therefore, I cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. A. Are you grieved with the junk that's going on in your life? If you're not grieved, you're not going to get rid of it. And what are the steps? I can't remember the steps either. Jimmy probably can. We've got to be careful. Clear yourself. You know, you guys taking care of that. There's the one. Indignation. And then it goes on. Then desire. Not till the end. revenge is the very, when you do right, you're doing revenge. Okay, but indignation, grieve. If you're not, he grieves at what he saw, and he just chucks it. Then I commanded verse 9, and they cleansed the chambers, and thither brought I again the vessels of the house of God, and he rebuilds it, cleans it up, and he gets rid of the stuff, and he fixes it. Look at verse 17 now. I mean, there's so many things in here. Look at verse 17. This is what I figured was worth yakking about, I guess. Then I contended with the nobles of Judah and said unto them, what evil thing is this that ye do and profane the Sabbath day? Now here we go. Remember he made this a holy day? In fact, I was going to point that out way back in chapter 8. Okay, makes it into a holy day. Yep. People today that think the seventh day is the holy day, or whatever day is their holy day, Sunday, even Sunday, people, that's a holy day, they have no clue what they're supposed to not do. They have no clue what they're supposed to get rid of. So, whatever. Nehemiah, what you're telling. Look at verse 18. Did not your fathers thus, and did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon the city? Yet ye bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath. So all the stuff that Israel did before, and they say that we signed this covenant because you still had your goodness, but you should have done what you did. You were right, God, to do what you did. And here's Nehemiah getting on these nobles for what they have done, and they're bringing it all back. And Nehemiah gets in and tries to clean house again. And what happens after Nehemiah and all the books, what happens? They go right back to the same old stuff. We know it's coming. I mean, they go back to the strange wives and the whole thing in the next couple of books. Malachi and the whole deal. It's amazing. But he's trying. Look at verse 19. Here we go, 19. Now he's got these gates, and then he's going to, here's the law on Sabbath. You know, you're not going to sell anything out there. Verse 19. And it came to pass that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, I commanded that the gates should be shut, and charged that they should not be opened till after the Sabbath. And some of my servants set eye at the gates, that there should be no burden be brought in on the Sabbath day. Don't even bug me, it's Sunday. Keep your grief, call me Monday. Right? Do you ever, you know, I'm working on a message, and this is not you, because you come in early, we yak it. I'm not talking about you. sugar plum. I mean, this is not what I'm talking about. But every once in a while, a major tragedy will happen within somebody's family, and you come in and you'll tell me, and you just go bonker wonkers on this thing, and I got to preach a really nice, positive, encouraging, lovey-dovey message in about 6 minutes. Now, that kind of a thing. But you quit coming to me with your grief, because you know I just say, well, fix it. You got a Bible, you figure it out. I got to work on some Mozart a little bit. Anyway, so that's what he's saying there, verse 20. So the merchants and sellers of all kind of ware lodged without Jerusalem once or twice. They still did it. Then I testified against them and said unto them, why lodge ye about the wall? If ye do so again, I will lay hands on you, and I don't think it was the way Paul did it. It's just not the way it is. From that time forth came they no more on the Sabbath. There you are. Nehemiah is a good guy. You keep that junk out of here on Sunday. Or Saturday, if that's their Sabbath, you know, kind of a thing. But okay. Let's see here. We're looking at 21. He enforces the law. Yep. 23. That finishes up some of the Sabbath stuff. Now we've got another problem he's going to deal with here. In those days also, wouldn't it be nice if a president would step into America and kind of be this way? I mean, he would clean out all the Department of Education. All these, he'd just junk all this stuff, and that's not going to happen. 23, in those days also saw I Jews that had married wives of Ashdod, of Ammon, and of Moab, which is really a no-no. And the children spake half in the speech of Ashdod and could not speak in the Jews' language. Now, there's you know, mixed marriages, crazy marriages or whatever, and saved, lost, whatever. And the kids start, they're able to talk, kind of half lost and half saved, you know, and, you know, that kind of stuff. What a mess when people do that, but oh well. And I contended with them. There he is. He contended with them. This guy just doesn't seem to have any love in his heart. And cursed them and smote certain of them. Plucked off their hair. Boy. What do you think? Dave, what do you think? I come over there and grab your hair? But I guess that wouldn't work. I have to think of something else here. Either that or you've had a lot of problems with previous pastors. Or maybe your wife has claimed this one. Get over here. And made them swear by God, saying, you shall not give your daughters unto their sons, nor make their daughters unto your sons, or for yourselves. Promise me. You promise me. By the way, would you sign this piece of paper that tells me that when you do get married, you marry my daughter, that you're not going to have birth control, you're going to have as many kids as comes up as between now and when you're now 80. You're going to sign this. You want to marry my daughter? You sign this. You ever heard of that? They still do it. I keep bashing the marshals. I don't want to do that. So I won't tell you who it was. That's what he made all the husbands sign for his daughters. He had like $50,000, and every one of those husbands had to say, okay, yeah, we'll have as many kids as we can come up with. And they got how many grandkids now? 33 grandkids, and mom and dad are only 36. Anyway, that's not true. I probably should mark that and take part of that. I probably won't. None of our people even care anyway out there about that. Isn't that amazing? I mean, covenants. That's what they're doing. Covenant, join the church, sign our covenant. Honey, you want to marry me? Here's my covenant. To the man, you want to marry me? Here's what you need to agree to. You know, that kind of a thing. It's just crazy. It's anything but Bible. Prenuptial agreements, postnuptial apologies. I mean, you know, the whole thing. Anyway, you little paper signs that says, if we don't get along, I get everything you got. That's what she signed, you know. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure, I'll sign it because I love you. What a dummy. Anyway. Well, let's see. Where are we at? Strange wives. I contended with them that, verse 26, did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin by these things? I mean, here's the wisest man in the world. Did he blow it by this whole thing? Yet among many nations, there was no king like him. Nevertheless, even did the outlandish women cause to sin. fell through the standard thing. Shall we hearken unto you to do all this great evil, to transgress against our God and marrying strange wives? Then we find more family involved. Look at 38, 28. And one of the sons of Judiah, the son of Eliashib, you know, there we are again, the high priest, was son-in-law to Sanballat. Now, you know the son-in-laws, are the commandments on there? Yes, I tell you, the son-in-laws that are covenanted with the world. Relax, Mike, I'm not talking about you, of course. Hi, Matthew. He just looked at you, not me. Yes. Matthew, hello. What have you told him about me already? All the other kids don't look at me either. There's something wrong around here. I don't know what it is. So, there we got family. But look what he did. Gary, therefore I chased him from me. What we got here? We got more family. Let's see. I've got family here. Four. Look at 7 and 8. Verse 7 and 8. Now we've been through those, the Tobias stuff and all that. So family's involved. When you try to fix your wall and build up your protection, you got family involved trying to take you down. I know. But that's where it's at. Now, look at verse 14. I think this is kind of interesting here. Verse 14 of chapter 13 there. Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and wipe not out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for the offices thereof. I just find that interesting. God, please remember what I've done. You know? And in this day, they had to do stuff. I mean, they had to be the one to do it, and their whole eternal future is based on that. They had to obey God, and this is what they had to do. So, you know, how many kids, Danica and Zach, is Zach's falling asleep, rough night, huh? And Olivia, you mean you want your parents to remember the good stuff you've done, not the bad stuff. If there is any bad stuff. I mean, there may not be any bad stuff yet, Sam. I mean, you know, but you want your dad to remember the good stuff you did. It just seems that parents bring up the bad stuff 10 years later. They don't remember the good stuff. You know? And Nehemiah wants him to remember the good. Look at verse 31. There it is again. And remember me, O my God, for good. Remember me. Now, cleaning house. Who's had to clean house that we can remember? Oh, Jeremiah. Root out, how's that go? Root out, pull down, destroy, throw down. That's cleaning house. Then build and plant. Oop, left off the comma. And we got Nehemiah. What did Nehemiah have to clear out in chapter 4? Rubbish. Get rid of the rubbish. Look at Acts chapter 19. What about Paul? What does he do regarding cleaning house? He tells us to separate. He doesn't tell us in an Old Testament fashion, but there are some things that we're to stay away from, and sad to say, some of us, the brethren. Paul even talks about that. Acts 19:19. Here's an example of something. Many of them also which used curious arts brought their books together and burned them before all men, and they counted the price of them and found it 50,000 pieces of silver. They could have made 50,000 silver pieces if they'd have sold it. But they burned it instead. And so mightily grew the word of God and prevailed. So cleaning house is a good thing. And what's the name of that guy around that does the cleaning video that we all laughed with that and gave us the different boxes and stuff? Remember the guy's name, but if you got something, you just put some of the stuff you don't know if you want or not. Remember what the guy's name? What? Don Asley. And he tells you to take a box and put stuff you don't know what, throw it away, put in that box, and then a couple months later, don't open it. But if you don't know what's in there and you're not missing anything, throw it away and you'll never know. You know? And I've got a stack of papers in my desk that one of these days I've forgotten what's in there. And I know if I go through it, I'm going to be swamped with email responses and the whole thing. But if I just throw it away, I'm clean. So if anybody out there has written to me and I have not responded, I probably never will. Try it again. I'm 680, I think it's 685 emails I'm behind now. Which most of them can just go, you know, but marvelous stuff. Nehemiah was really a marvelous book. Esther, marvelous stuff to read. Nehemiah, Jeremiah, all these books about Elisha and Elijah. And I kind of forget, but I'm trying to gear this so the kids can understand it. I kind of forget that sometimes, so take this stuff. This is a marvelous chance for you to sit down and talk to your kids. I hope I'm helping you find a way to talk to kids about these stories. Don't just sit down and blow through the chapter and figure they got it. Talk to them about the story. And you're not correcting the Word of God. You read it the way it says, and you can still tell them the story. It's not anything wrong with that. You're not correcting the Bible or changing it. You're just trying to give the sense and understanding.